I'm super excited to hear from all of these people here in the front about their either short or long-term missions experience. I'll pray for us quick, and then we can start. So, dear Lord, I just thank you so much for missions and for your work in all of the countries. I thank you for the opportunities and the experiences you've given our own congregation to go out. I thank you for the spirit that leads us to share your words, and I just pray that this group would be blessed as we get to hear these stories. In your name I pray, amen. Okay, so like Dan said, I'm Kendra. I spent a few years on the missions field after high school with YWAM, Youth with a Mission. There's a lot of different acronyms for these missions things. There's OM, there's MTW. I'm probably missing so many, but I went with Youth with a Mission. And most recently, I went to Portugal. It was in the summer of 2024, so a little while now. But I want to talk a little bit about what I saw happen there. The initial response when I told people that I was going to Portugal on an outreach was kind of a reaction of, why Portugal? Is that the place with the greatest spiritual need? Portugal is a predominantly Catholic nation, and so a lot of the thought process was, well, they're already aware of Jesus, they have an understanding, so why not focus on the places that maybe like have literally never heard? But I think what my team and I realized pretty quickly was that, well, yes, obviously, having never heard of Jesus is a very big spiritual need. It's kind of equally as large of a need when people know of him but have a skewed or an incomplete perspective on him. And so we got to, through a number of different ways, just present Jesus, hopefully in a more clear picture. And there were a number of ways we did that. This team was sent out by one of YWAM's creative departments. This was the School of Dance Ministries, and so dance was a big part of what we were doing. So if you ever want to hear more about dance and missions, there's a lot of stories that I can share. But through one way or another, we got in these conversational situations with people about Jesus. And I brought, yes, we would use these little cards. This was one tool, and I'm sure you can't read it from here, but they're all these simple little statements about kind of the relational nature of God. They say, like, I love you, I hear you, I see you, I understand you. Just these little one-liners that explain, like, God as he is relational. And so we would use those a lot and kind of just explain a little further. And that was what was missing a lot of the time in people's understanding was, what does it mean that he loves you, he understands you, he sees you? Just some neat experiences watching people kind of light up when they understood that for the first time. So that's a little blurb on Portugal, what's going on there, or what was going on in the summer of 2024. It's been a little while now. Next, I'll invite, I don't know who wants to go next, Nicole.
All right. My name is Nicole Lammers, and this past July, my husband and I had the opportunity to go to, I say this wrong every time, Nikšić, Montenegro. I think I said the name right. We went, probably not thinking of it as much as a mission trip, as a way to connect with our son. Our son Jacob has gone to Montenegro in 2016, 17, 18, 19, 24, and then 25 with us. So we wanted to see why he kept going back, what he loved about this place and these people. And we did go and we did serve at Camp Monte. It is a sports and English camp. I am not athletic, so God definitely stretched me in that one. I got to assist with tennis. Paul and Jacob worked in basketball. And when I say assist, I mean I like chased after balls or was told where to place things, because I cannot, I don't know if I've ever held a tennis racket before in my life, but God still used me to do that. I got to learn a lot of things. I had never been out of the country before, so this was a first-time trip for me out of, other than, like, Canada. And just being with this group of people, I think one of the things that touched me the most was hearing every tribe and tongue and nation. The people who worked Camp Monte were from England, the Netherlands, Romania, Serbia, Montenegro, the U.S. There was a group from New Jersey that came also. And to hear the prayers and the songs of worship as we worshiped together, and that language was no barrier, because we could still, we were singing in Montenegro by the end because the words were listed, which was really neat. And yeah, I think that really hit me. But it was a new kind of mission trip for Paul and I. We usually go on mission trips where we build or clean or do some sort of physical work. And this trip is not about that. It is about relationship and building. The people of Montenegro are mostly Eastern Orthodox, and they believe Christianity is a cult. So when we say we're going to teach their kids 6 through 17 sports and English, they are afraid we are brainwashing their children. So some of the parents would sometimes come and sit and watch as we taught the sport or English. I did get to teach English. It's not like VBS, though, so that was changed when I got there. It is because we have to be people of integrity, and we said it is an English camp. It is teaching English and sprinkling in the word as we can. So for an example, I had early learners in the afternoons, and I taught a lesson in prepositions. I made a path, like an obstacle course, and we had the word in, under, over, around, and we did those words. And then I kind of related it to and shared with them that Jesus is a light unto our path. So kind of added it in, but it's not like we can teach about Noah's Ark and then kind of relate English to it. It is English first and then the gospel. So one of the things that really struck us and probably was the most meaningful to see, sounds a little funny, but because it is a trip of relationship building and Jacob has gone for so many years, it meant so much to the people that he brought his parents, that he cares enough about them after so many years of coming. It was proof that he cares about them because he brought us there. He even got teased a little bit because in 24, one of our other kids went with him, and then this year he brought us, and some of the workers were like, all right, Jacob, which wife are you choosing? Because you're now introducing your family to these people, so there must be a woman involved. So it was kind of cute. But we got to see young people who had come to camp in 2016, and Jacob got to know, share their testimony in the evenings with the kids. So it is not an immediate, you're there, you share about Jesus, and people just fall in love with him. It is a gradual, ongoing relationship building, but it is life-changing. And it was really neat to see these young women, and there were some young men, too, who were part of the camp when they were youth, and now in their, I think she was like 19, 20, 23, they're now helping out at Camp Monte, and they are sharing their faith with others. So, all right.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, Nicole. Next, Xander, Xander's going to go next. This is Xander. He's a recent graduate of Kelvin. He works with Campus Outreach now, and he went to Africa last summer. So we're going to hear about that.
Hey, everyone. I'm Xander. So last summer, I went in the month of June, I went on a mission trip with a group called Overland Missions. We spent a month just traveling around to various remote tribes that were not familiar with the gospel in Namibia and Angola. They're on the Atlantic coast of Africa. And While we were in Africa, we were essentially helping some of Overland's long-term missionaries who were staying there to just accelerate their work, help them reach more people at a faster rate. And I want to focus on one specific story. Well, actually, let me tell you about like what our day-to-day looked like. So we went to three different areas, one in Namibia, two in Angola, stayed about 4 or 5 days at each, and then every day we would split up. We had a group of about 20 people. We'd split into three groups. We had translators. We had, lunch for the day. We'd go out in the morning, go door to door, either by cars, if we had cars with us, or walking, depending on the area we were at. And we would just go to door to door, sharing the gospel. That was the only focus of the trip, just sharing the gospel with people who had never heard it before. And there's one story in particular that has stood out with me. In our third location, we were with a group called the Mukubal. They're in southeast Angola. And where we were staying, we were in a little town, kind of a central area. The Mukubal are very remote. They are very hard to reach, just physically. they're in the middle of a desert, essentially, by like this big mountain range. And so we would go from our camp, and I'm in a group with there's like seven of us, and we drove for an hour on this long, like bumpy road. All the roads in Africa are terrible. And we get to this spot, and there's a bunch of houses around us, there's some mountains in the back, and there's like this tree kind of in the middle, and there's like a ring of rocks around it, and it's kind of like their little meeting spot. And we get there, and we're greeted by a dozen or so people, and start to talk to them, get to know them. And then we start asking them, well, have you ever heard of Jesus? None of them had any idea who Jesus was. And so then we sort of start to go into, well, what do you know about God? What do you think he's like? And there's one passage in Romans 1, I think it's verse 18 or 19, it talks about how God's character is revealed in nature. And basically after this encounter, I had no doubt in my mind. We'll never again doubt the reality of that verse, because we asked them this and they said essentially, well, we don't know what God's like, but we think that he must be a good God, because if he's so powerful that he could create all the mountains and the tree, like everything, then he must be really powerful, so powerful that he could just strike us down instantly. And, well, he hasn't done that, so he must be a good God. That was their reasoning. And we were like, you're absolutely right. But they didn't know Jesus. They didn't have the gospel. And so we sort of talked them through the fall. And then we'd agreed, decided, since there were a lot of people in this area nearby who weren't with us, we decided we're going to leave them with a little like taste of like, this is, there's the fall, but God had a plan to bring us back to him, and just give them a little taste of it, and told them, gather up like anyone you know, like just tell them we're going to be back here in 2 days. And so we come back, we wait, and people just keep on coming in. There was over 100 people there. And Tom, the missionary we were with, who was in our group, the long-term missionary, he said that was the biggest group he'd ever been with in Angola in his like 12 years of mission work. And so we're there, we share the gospel with them. And these people were just amazed. I mean, they were filled with joy. At altar call, there was probably, I just remember this picture of all like 60 people just like arms spread wide, just like praising God and like receiving Jesus all there at the same time. And yeah, it was just a celebration. And Tom, we've had a bit of contact with him, just updating us, our group, as in the months past, like after our trip. And he talked about this specific location and that it's become like they have designated an area for him to come back and like stay with them, right by the river. And it's just become like this area is forever changed by the gospel. They word's traveling, like more people are receiving Jesus. He's been discipling all the believers there now. And yeah, I don't even have words. Like, I'll never forget it. If you ever get a chance to do something like that, take it. It'll change your life. Yeah. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you, Xander. Next, Greg, would you like to go next? This is Greg. Him and Ingrid have been in Berlin for 4 years. Is that right? Okay. And he'll share with us about that.
Thank you. There's no podium to hide behind. So what I've been doing in Berlin, this is the east part of Berlin, the old Soviet Union side, the GDR, German Democratic Republic. Sadly, it was not very democratic. It was very brutal, actually. Look, you know, you study it. What I do is go out on the street to try to engage with people using a Bible distribution table. It's a very small, portable thing that has a sign that says gratis Bible, free Bible, Gospels in 30 languages. The intent is, yes, thrilled to distribute a Bible in their language, or a Gospel or a New Testament. I have a few German Bibles, but I prefer actually to give them a Gospel or New Testament. But so it's really an opportunity to engage with them, to try to start a conversation, challenge them, etc. So, of course, being out, trying to learn German, which I have not succeeded at, wanting to have Germans join me. So what Dan was interested that I share is that has worked very well, because there's actually a real desire with the German Christians that live in East Berlin, and these are, I think all of them are grew up in the former GDR. They have come to outreaches, the bigger outreaches that we've had, to kind of my friend, mentor, Bernard, who's my age and been an evangelist for his whole ministry life. They have come to him and said, I want to do something. I want to evangelize. I want to talk to people about Christ. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do it. I don't know what to do. I don't want to just go out by myself. And every person that has joined me came the same way. They came to Bernard, and Bernard said, you know, this guy, this American missionary guy, me, is working in Lichtenberg. He's there at Boa. Talk to him and see if you can join him. So everyone has been like that, where you have this built-in desire, and much better than trying to send a clumsy American missionary learning the language, all the support and the difficulty and different visas. And you have people there already, and all they need is to have help. And the thing with this is that even for me, it's so easy. It's so simple and so easy. The whole thing with witnessing, if we had a seminar here for a week, you know, teaching everyone, go out and witness to people, impossible, impossible. If you're telling people they have to go and approach people and try to start a conversation, very, very, very few people are able, willing to do that. I had experience with that years ago, campus ministry, still very difficult. I used to do that the first year. I'd go to English-speaking areas and stop people. I can do it, and then you have great conversations, but I can't continue. It's very difficult to continue doing it. You have a couple of good conversations, and then I'm just totally beat and very hard to do. So this, what you do is you're just there. You know, you set yourself up at the subway train stations. You have flow of people coming by. You're just there. You can. Often I'll go with track and try to initiate conversations, but you don't have to. you can literally, you're not just standing there in front of the table like a hot dog salesman. You're, you know, I'm wandering around and praying, and that sometimes is much better. They're not having someone to confront. Like, you'll see them always. This is more normally the case. You'll be way far, quite a ways away, and you see someone going to the table. So you kind of, you know, slowly walk over, and, you know, some people need encouragement. Hey, yes, they're free. Everything's free. What would you like? You know, are you a Christian? Did you grow up in a Christian family? Oh, no, you'd probably call me an atheist, whatever. So you just, such an easy way. You don't need to be an evangelist. You don't need to be, all you need to be is a believer. If I stood any of you there, you would so easily get into a conversation challenging them to, you know, whatever, even just taking one of the Gospels, the Gospel of Luke. This is a biography of the whole life of Christ and ministry of Christ. You want to learn what Jesus Christ is about. This is it right here. Then you can elaborate, you can talk, whatever. But so it works. And the people that, when I was leaving, this was the very cool thing. They came to me and said, can you leave us with one of your tables? You know, I had a couple different ones, and I said, okay, you know, I'll set you up. So there are three people that are set up with these tables and doing it, and which is very cool. That was kind of my prayer and desire. But they all came with, you know, they wanted to do this, and they found it, it just works. It's so simple and so easy. That's it. I'm finished.
Thank you, Greg. Okay, next, Jenny? Okay, this is Jenny Stawicki. She grew up in Japan?
2 years.
2 years in Japan growing up, and went back on the vision trip to visit Kuni with five of you?
I was one of five.
One of five from Christchurch. So we get to hear about that.
Hey, so I've been to Japan 3 times. I spent 2 years as like a 10 and 11-year-old in Japan, and you know, Japan is known for being tight spaces. We were not able to live on the military base. We were not high enough priority, so we lived out in the community, and my mom decided that driving on the opposite side of the road 30 minutes to base was too much, so she said, you're going to public school here. So my siblings and I would walk about a mile and a half, literally up and down a mountain, because Japan is very mountainous, to the public school, and we learned Japanese. And it was a really fun and hard experience as we kind of was sink or swim learning. I remember one of the first days of school, my teacher called me up, and he just wanted to know if I knew how to play rock, paper, scissors. And the entire class got up out of their seats, and they circled, and he was like, Jun, Kan, Pong, and like waited. And I was like, paper wins, and the whole class erupted, and that was like one of my earliest memories, and now I know how to play rock, paper, scissors in Japanese. And I just remember, never in my entire life have I ever felt like I stood out so much, because Japan is so homogeneous. There was no hiding from me. I was much blonder, and my mom really encouraged the natural curl that I had with a perm, so I really stood out, and people would stop me on the street and be like, shashin totemo ii, and like, I was like, I guess you can take a picture of me, but they just are so homogeneous that our family really stood out, and we learned a lot in Japan in public school. The students are, you eat the public food, so you serve it yourselves, you pull it up from the cafeteria, you serve it to your classmates, you clean it up. I really struggled the day that they served fish mixed in with the rice. That was not my favorite day, but after that, we all stopped and cleaned the school, including the toilets, and that was also not my favorite job, but we would get down on our hands and knees and push the rag across the wooden floors, and just learned from an early age to take care of and be respectful. And that is a huge emphasis in Japan, is being respectful, being mannerly, respecting your elders. High priority in Japan. And I learned that early on. In Japan, there are many temples and shrines just on the way to school. It passed several. When we went back to Japan with our missions trip, we kept seeing them. You'd walk along the modern buildings, and then there's this very old shrine or a temple. And inside homes of the friends that I would visit, they would have a counter set up with the different shrines. It's very ingrained in the culture. And it's also very important to the Japanese with their homogeneity to not stand out and be different. And so one of the things that Kuni was sharing with us is it's very difficult to convince Japanese who are thinking their nationalism and their who they are is so tied to this that they don't want to break through it. I remember something that Kuni said that really struck me was sometimes they will work on a relationship, which is another thing is, so they keep ministering and witnessing to a person, and they'd get to the point where the person would say, I believe, but I can't be a Christian because I'm Japanese. And it's very hard to separate that and to tell them you are Japanese, but you can also believe in God. So the church that we visited with Kuni was very small, and it's very typical of a church. And when we would talk to the people, they would say, how big is your church? And we would tell them, and they're like, oh, that must sound like heaven. And it was really sweet to, like, their idea of our everyday Sunday would, like, just the volume of our worship must sound like heaven. And that was really striking for me to hear them say and put Sunday morning in a different perspective. Something else that really stood out to me in Japan is just how well the different denominations work together and share pastors, because there's such a great need for pastors. There's a lot of churches without pastors, that there's just a really great network of sharing and sending one pastor to a new church so that the whole Christian faith is supported. And there's still a great need for pastors. And the pastor college where Kuni works, even though they're Presbyterian, they take men and women because there's just a need. And so they do train up women to be pastors. And so as you think of Japan and just think of how to pray for them, I encourage you to pray for leaders that come up in the Japanese population because there is a great need there.
Thank you, Jenny. Okay, next, Sarah, are you ready? Okay, you can come. Sarah's gonna come. Sarah grew up as a missionary kid and also did missions as an adult. So we'll hear some stories from her.
So interestingly enough, this morning, a few of us came up and said, what are we supposed to be talking about? And I said, I guess I'll just wing it. And really, this is what missions is all about. You go in thinking I'm going to do one thing, or maybe not very clear about something, and somehow the Lord works things out for his good with all of your inabilities or lack of preparedness. So I grew up in Argentina. I was there for 18 years, so all of my growing up years, my parents, were there for 35 years as missionaries in the northwestern part of Argentina, so in the Andes Mountains. So I also stood out, and I remember as a kid always wanting to fit in because I was so blonde, and all of my friends had this beautiful dark hair. And that was kind of the theme of my growing up years, of just never quite fitting in. But God works all things out for good. And I've kind of gotten used to not fitting in. When I was, when David and I went over to Albania, Europe, it was like going home in a way, because I was used to not being part of culture, but I had the gift, lots of practice, of figuring out how to enter culture. And so I speak Spanish, hablo español, para los que hablan y entienden español. And then, because of that ability to speak a second language, the third language, with a lot of work, came after 2 years. But that's one of the things I think I could have, I have so many stories, but I think the long-term missionary in me, it's some of the words that stick out to me are, you have to persevere. Entering into a culture when you're almost 30 without a word of Albanian, you know, how do I communicate even small things like, you know, like the greetings or my humor, my sense of humor was completely wiped away. And that longing to be able to make a joke and make someone laugh was part of the things that drove me to learn Albanian. And I remember 2 years into it when I finally said something and people laughed. It takes a lot of effort. It took David and me a good 2 years to really learn the language. And I think with these short-term mission stories, they're really cool, that experience of like the immediate results. Long-term missions, you see these little pockets, but you're also, it can be discouraging. And you're in there for the long haul. I remember in Albania, about a couple of years into it, one of the ladies from my daughter Sofia's kopësht, which is preschool, knocked on my door. And our girls played a lot together. Albanians are mostly Muslim, but we were in a very Orthodox area for a few years. So she went to church regularly, you know, got baptized into the Orthodox church, never read the Bible. There weren't any Bibles. There were no Bibles available, really. Like, they just, you know, went to church and listened to what the priest said, and that was it. But she had some really deep spiritual questions, and she was afraid. There had been some rumors of some end-of-the-world type thing. I think this was in 2012 or 14. And she said, what does the Bible say about all of this? I mean, should I be afraid of for my soul? Should I be afraid? What does God say about this? And this is over coffee in my house. And I miss those days. Here in the States, things are really rushed. Everybody's busy. Everybody has to work, get places. But the showing up at someone's door is very rare. And so if there's anything that I could encourage all of you to do, is make time for people. All the other stuff is pretty secondary. But when you make time to listen, to talk to encourage, it's international, really. And you never know when you might have the opportunity to share the gospel, you know. So be intentional, be curious, ask questions, notice. So that's what I have.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay, last but not least, we have Lindsay. Lindsay grew up as a missionary kid also. Nigeria?
Yeah.
Okay, in Nigeria. So we get to hear from her last.
Thank you. I grew up in Nigeria, but I'm just going to give you a little backtrack. My grandparents were missionaries throughout Latin America, and they traveled from, to various countries. But my dad grew up in Argentina, that was where he kind of has his childhood and kind of had put down some roots there, and then moved here to Grand Rapids for Calvin College and met my mom and so on. So background, grandparents who were career missionaries throughout Latin America, and then my dad, having grown up on the mission field, really wanted to do missions as well. Went to the CRWRC, which has its headquarters here in Grand Rapids, and his parents also were through the same missionary agency. And he said, you know, hey, I speak Spanish. I'm a pilot. Would love to, you know, go and use those skills. And they said, great, we'll send you to Nigeria. didn't seem to make sense to him. Because, you know, obviously the language didn't fit. But Ray Brown, I was a missionary in Nigeria who started an aviation program, and there was a need for a pilot in the bush of Nigeria. And so my mom and he just packed up. They had two little kids, ages 2 and 4. I was 4, my sister was 2. And they moved to the bush of Africa. And I just feel like, wow, what a thing to do. I cannot imagine packing up my own kids at that age and taking them to a place where there was nothing. I mean, just there's nothing. So, but they follow God's call. They went. They tried to learn the language. We lived in a small village. We had a cinder block house with tin roof, but the people around us were in dirt mud huts with a grass thatch roof. And they had an airport nearby. It was a hangar with 3 planes at the most, and then a runway that had basically cows and grass. So they had to clear the cows, clear the people, and then they could take off with the plane. But their job was, there was a couple pilots on the compound that we lived with, and their job was to obviously fly missionaries from remote place to remote place, but also for the locals to get health care. You know, they didn't have access to hospitals and healthcare, and so they would fly them into the larger city of like Jos or Lagos in order to receive that care. And so they have, my dad has amazing stories of some of those interesting flights. Being in the bush, as I got older, then it came to be a question of education, you know. And I know nowadays it's very popular for missionary families to do homeschooling, but at the time that wasn't a very popular thing in the early 80s. And so the options were not many. And my parents decided that I would go to boarding school. And it was a Christian boarding school in Jos. And as a first grader, they were going to send me there. And again, I just think, wow, Mom and Dad, you're crazy. I could never do that. But it was a 2-hour flight. And then my dad would actually get the missionary kids from the area, and we'd get into the airplane and fly us there. We could fit about 7 people in the plane and all our stuff. And then it was called Mountain View Youth Hostel, and there were kids from, I was the youngest, I was the only first grader there, all the way up to seniors in high school. And I had 2 third grade roommates, and you know, we had our kind of routine that we made our lunches, and you know, we had to do our laundry, and you had to kind of figure it out as you go. I remember all my clothing was labeled with my name on it. Every doll and every little piece of clothing my doll had even had my name stitched onto it. So just a different lifestyle for sure. But we had a good time growing up in that environment. I made friends, and memories are really sweet during my time there. I went to a school that had international students in it because it was a Christian English-speaking school, so that drew a lot of people internationally, as well as locals and missionary kids from not just Nigeria, but around all of West Africa. And so it was a very multicultural school. Enjoyed going to school there very much. But, you know, as a first grader, there's things you miss, right? You know, and so when you're sick and you want your mom, you know, and that can't happen, or when you know, you're having a bad day, or you just don't have, you know, the things that, the food that you want, or whatever it may be. Those are things I can remember still. But just thinking, like, you know, I believe that God had our family here for a reason, and God would take care of me, even if it meant, you know, whatever came, that he would still protect me and be with me. I remember even just thinking, like, even if I had to walk all the way to my parents' house, he would keep me safe as I walked all the way. Just knowing that he would provide. And that really became a part of my testimony growing up. I saw what my parents were doing and that they gave up a lot. You know, they gave up the comforts. They gave up being with their daughter. Those were things that they had to give up. And that if my parents, who I knew loved me very much, cared enough to do that, then this God that we were talking about, this Jesus that I was learning about, he had to be true. Like, there's no doubt. And so I remember walking around my compound, just even as a little kid, and praying to God, thinking, saying, God, Lord, if you're real, like, I want to know you. I want to walk with you. And then just taking that into boarding school and knowing, like, yeah, even in these times where I feel alone, God is with me. And taking that now into my adulthood, knowing that God has a plan. He's with me. Those are important things. But the idea of sacrifice as well, that my parents had to do, right? Knowing that God calls for sacrifice as well. And not knowing what that looks like, but trusting in God that that will be okay. I would say, as far as for being a missionary kid, there are times, right, that I didn't know or didn't know what was going on, but that that you have this trust. It's almost like that childlike faith, right, that you have. And that is something that I want to continue in my life and my own family's life. Yeah, I think that's probably what I got. So thank you.
Okay, well, thank you to Lindsay and everyone who shared. We have a little time yet, so Dan is going to come and share as well. Real quick, though, something that Lee reminded me to say. He made these awesome little prayer booklets for our missionaries, and I think he put a stack, like, yeah. Well, there he is with his stack. So awesome. So, yes, thank you, Lee, for doing that. And we encourage you to get one of those if you haven't. Pray for our missionaries. Contact our missionaries. Adopt them. Yeah. So, okay. Here's Dan. All right.
Thanks, Kendra. Thank you for the panel here for sharing. I think what the picture you may have gotten is missions is not one thing. It's a wide variety of experiences and opportunities. And different in every country, different parts of the world, different stages in your life. And I think some of you may not have known that these people in our congregation have had this kind of cross-cultural experience, and now you do. So I hope that you'll take an opportunity to talk with them, ask questions, find out more about them, find out more about their experience. I guess the other thing we want to communicate is, you know, the Great Commission is still going on that Jesus gave 2,000 years ago, and none of us really has the option to take a pass on the Great Commission. So we're all involved in some way, in various ways, and we talk about sometimes pray, give, and go, and God may not be calling you to go to another country, but all of us are called to be involved in praying for that work. Our church is supporting 20 missionaries around the world and praying for them on a regular basis. And Lee DeHoag has put together this booklet that has all of our missionaries in it with prayer requests for each of them. And so they're going to be available, Lee, on the back table or just here as you leave. If you didn't already get one of these booklets on Wednesday night when we were sort of passing them out, then please take one per family home with you. Use it as a part of your regular family prayer times, mealtime prayers. Just single out one missionary. Maybe you want to sort of adopt a missionary out of that booklet and say, this is the missionary we're going to pray for on a very regular basis. But it'll introduce you to all of all the mission work that's going on. And maybe God is going to call you to be a part of a short-term mission here in a summer experience or an internship or a vision trip. As Jenny was talking about, we had 5 team members from our church go on a vision trip to Japan this last fall. And so there are lots of different opportunities that you could get involved with. You could, in retirement, you can, as George has been, Dykstra has been involved in retirement and making visits to other countries, especially including, I think you were in JAWS, weren't you, George? In Nigeria. Yeah, that's great. And so there are lots of possibilities of ways that you might get involved. But I was just going to share one story. Some of you know that I worked with campus ministry my whole life, and in this country and in other countries around the world, especially in Eastern Europe. For 6 years, I was overseeing the student ministry in 19 countries in Eastern Europe and traveling around visiting. And one of the things I had to do was a lot of pioneering work, starting or restarting ministry in places like Bosnia as it became its own country. And I remember walking down the streets of Sarajevo, trying to figure out how to start a student ministry at the university there, doing a prayer walk around the university, and asking God for just one Christian contact. And then I met a Christian pastor who said, we have one student in our church at the university, and she's a very mature Christian, and she'd be happy to talk to you about starting a ministry on this campus. And so I met her, Anissa, and she introduced me to seven others, Christians on the campus, and that became the beginning of a student ministry in Bosnia. And Anissa went on to become our first Bosnian staff member. It was one of those moments, and I know Lee has had this experience too, working for 40 years in North Africa, one of those moments when I realized people at home are praying, because this would only happen if something like if the people of God were praying for this kind of connection, this kind of contact to be made. And so our prayers are important, and I trust that we will continue to be a part of that and be a part of God's great commission, whether we are going to another country or whether we're praying for those who are there or whether we're going on just on a short-term experience. So let me close our time together here in prayer. Lord, thank you for each of these who shared this morning. We thank you for their willingness to share from their heart and from their own experiences in life and in missions. And we thank you for the way you are using our church in around the world, and that we are not a church, that we are a church without walls, and that we are a church that looks outward and not simply inward. And we pray that that will continue to be the case, and that you will open our hearts to what you are doing around the world and how you might have us to become more involved in taking the next step of participating in your great commission, that all the nations of the world will be blessed, and that your light would go out and be seen. So thank you for all these things. In the name of Jesus, amen.